Hey, everyone. Extra episode this week. Mm-hmm. We had the great opportunity to meet with Charlie from Crime Lines and Lainey from True Crime Cases with Lainey to essentially just talk about what is going on with the Adnan Syed case.
Yeah. So if you haven't turned on a Facebook page or looked at the news in the last week, you're behind in the true crime world. But some very big things are happening. You know, we all kind of started with Serial as our first true crime binge. I feel that that's a common denominator for almost everyone in the true crime world. And they put out a motion last week to vacate Adnan's conviction, which is very, very big, because not only did they put this out as a motion, but the state asked for it, not even the defense. And that's incredibly uncommon. And when we were given the opportunity to talk with Charlie and Lainey, obviously Melissa and I are like, sign us up, right?
There is nothing I like more than talking true crime. And we were going at this from the perspective as listeners, because regardless if we have a podcast, we are still true crime content listeners. Mm-hmm. We are devoted to cases like Adnan's, where it baffled our minds for so many years.
Mm-hmm. And we all started with Serial. Then we all went to Undisclosed, and we have all followed Rabia Chaudhry on her fight. And this is just our way of discussing it. And it was absolutely amazing, and we wanted to share it with you.
Yes. As we were recording this, the hearing was in full force. We were getting live tweets, as you will hear throughout the episode.
We hope that you are able to follow Adnan's case. It's not over yet. The state still has 30 days to decide if they are going to retry Adnan. But we get into all the nitty-gritty. We just wanted to give you guys a heads up on what this bonus episode's about.
Yeah. Comment. Send us messages on social media. We'd love to hear your thoughts on mm-hmm. everything that's going on in this case.
Welcome to a discussion episode about the recent developments in the Adnan Syed legal case, which is the case of the murder of Haman Lee. I want to welcome Whitney and Melissa from Cold Crimes and Cabernet here, and Lainey from True Crime Cases and Crimes of Passion. We decided to get together not as podcasters, but as podcast listeners who happen to have microphones and, you know, podcast feeds to put our thoughts out on, to discuss what's going on with this case that we've all followed since Serial. So I want to go ahead and have my panel tell me a little bit how you started listening to podcasts and if Serial was your first podcast.
I'll go ahead and start. This is Melissa from Cults, Crimes, and Cabernet. So yes, Serial was the very first podcast I ever listened to. I didn't even know what a podcast was prior to Serial. And honestly, it jump-started me, obviously, into this true crime realm, this space that I never knew existed. After Serial, I was immersed. It was something that, I don't want to say it changed my life, but I never felt like I had something that I liked, enjoyed, you know, to listen to help solve. And it definitely pushed me into where I am now.
I'm the other half of that podcast. This is Whitney, and the same. I mean, Serial was my first, again, true crime podcast. I had listened to other genres of podcasts, news, real estate related, you know, motivational type podcasts, but I was never really into true crime until Serial. And then, of course, that led to Undisclosed, and that led to all of the others that subsequently followed. And when you get put into this world, when you fully immerse yourself into this genre, all you want to do is help. How can I listen more, help more, do more? And I think that Serial really led the way, that sometimes you just need a voice. And here it is.
So I actually joined late in the game to the Serial phenomenon. I actually started listening to Snapped Judgment before, and then was like, oh, I wonder if there's true crime podcast out there. And that's how I found Serial. And I was hooked on every episode. I couldn't get enough of it because I was so curious about this. It would go back and forth in terms of, for me at the time, determining Adnan's guilt, you know, based off of how Sarah laid out the case and the timeline, et cetera. And so at the time, it was the best thing that I could get in terms of finding a really immersive type of podcast that I could lose myself in day in and day out. Because I had a lot to catch up on when I first started listening. So I had the opportunity to really listen back to back. And going into the undisclosed side and realizing how tailored Serial was to the listener, you know, Sarah's attempt to be unbiased, if you will, really being able to see it from the perspective of somebody who's advocating for not only justice for Hay, but also Adnan's innocence, if you will, and getting him out of prison. So it's surreal to see this come full circle, because I don't know if anybody else feels the same, but I never anticipated that we would see this day. I truly believed that the justice system would fail. And we don't have, you know, an outcome yet, but this is probably the most positive I've ever seen anybody who's associated with the Adnan side feel about what could possibly happen here.
Yeah, we are actually recording it as the hearing is on a 30-minute recess after a motion to postpone was denied. And so we are just going to record some of our things. And when we have someone reading Twitter, keeping it refreshed for us, so when we do get our answers or whatever's happening, we will be able to give you our reactions to that. But for me, I homeschooled at the time Serial came out and spent a lot of time in the car. One thing they don't tell you about homeschooling is how much you drive, because you're giving your kids all these enrichment opportunities that they would just get at school. So I was in the car a lot. I listened to a lot of NPR while the kids had their audiobooks in the back, or, you know, their little Game Boys or whatever. And I would say something to my friend about how, oh, we got to the place, so I didn't finish this episode of whatever it was. And she's like, you know, that purple thing on your iPhone, you can listen to all your NPR shows on that. And I'm like, I can. She's like, yeah, it's called a podcast, and NPR uploads their shows there. I'm like, oh, well, I need to get to that. And it was, I need to get to that for a while. And then Serial came out. And I saw all my friends talking about it online, and it was a, you know, quote unquote murder mystery. Did he do it? Didn't he do it? And I was like, well, that sounds really interesting. And so that's when I decided to figure out how to use that purple app on my phone. And now I'm telling other people, hey, just use the purple app and find crime lines and you can listen to me too. But that's how I got into Serial, and I listened to it. I was completely just drawn into the investigative journalism. And obviously I know a lot more now than I did then about what Serial was and what it was not. But from there, I searched for other true crime shows. And that's when I found the Generation Y, which has, you know, Serial got me to open that app, but the Generation Y is what got me into podcasting as, oh, this is more than just this one-off This American Life series. So I listened to a lot of the branch off shows. So I listened to Undisclosed. I listened to Truth and Justice with Bob Ruff. It was actually called Serial Dynasty back then. And he had to change the name because they're like, hey, you know, we're coming out with a new season. And that's when he changed it to Truth and Justice. And for those who can really reach back in their memories, Crime Writers On used to be called Crime Writers On Serial. And they were digesting and dissecting and going into Serial from the viewpoint of both being true crime authors, but they also have a novelist in the group. So I listened to all the branch out things that also came from Serial. So to say I was immersed is an understatement. And then, of course, we have the book and the documentary now, which the documentary will come up as we talk about this motion to vacate. I know that Adnan had been granted a new trial and then that was overturned on appeal. So I feel like we were close before, but now it feels almost too good to be true.
Yeah. When we were talking about this prior to getting on, I was like, I don't want to jinx it, as if, you know, we have some sort of power over that. But it truly does feel like something that just saying the wrong thing or even having a notion of doubt will just catastrophically change the outcome. I think everybody who has been invested as much in this particular case and the outcome of it has really personalized it for themselves. And I think with Rabia especially being in the forefront of that fight for justice for not only Hay, but also for Adnan, and some of us have had the opportunity to meet her and engage with her in person, it is more like you really want your friend to be successful and you want this to be a thing that happens. And I can't imagine a world right now where Adnan can walk out and be free. I so want that for him, his family, because his mom, when she was on the documentary, broke my heart, man. I cried so much. And I'm typically really good at remaining disconnected so that I don't get too emotionally involved in anything, because otherwise I will break down every second. But seeing his mom talk about Adnan and really seeing the full picture of him through that documentary as well was so powerful and impactful that I think everybody who's invested in this is really, really cautious with how they feel and preemptively celebrating, you know, with some caution.
I completely agree, Lainey. That documentary, listening to Serial, then Undisclosed, and then watching that documentary and actually hearing Adnan's words and from other people that knew Hay, definitely gets you to a more emotional level. The one part of that documentary that sticks with me is when Adnan says, still one of the best nights of his life, that he had his first kiss with Hay. That it's just like that high school crush that I can't, that nostalgia of that being in high school and how dramatic everything was and, oh, he's my boyfriend today, but he's not tomorrow kind of thing that brings me back. And then you're rooting for them. And then you know the outcome of their lives. And that just tanks everything.
I agree with everything both of you said. I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. And I did recently just rewatch that documentary because while this case has been with us for years, I mean, years now, there's things that you forget. And it you have to kind of go back and refill those emotions because it is what started this true crime push in the world. And refilling all those initial feelings, I mean, it's the same. You refill that same feeling watching it every single time. Re-listening to Undisclosed, you feel just as intense as you did the first time you heard it. And I think that's what brings me back to this case every time, is because it feels so real for us. And it makes you, it just breaks my heart over and over again for Hay's family, for Adnan's family, because there is no win in this situation at all.
One of the things with Serial and Undisclosed and Truth and Justice is that I really think it brought a different type of true crime to us, because I grew up in a true crime family. This is a true story. My great grandmother was from Ireland. She was illiterate, and she would have her kids and her grandkids would read her True Detective magazine, because she was so into true crime. And that got them into these true crime stories. And so it was very much something that my family's just always, on my mom's side, has always had as part of like our entertainment, to be honest. And that's what it was then, because True Detective magazine was sensationalized. And then you get the paperbacks in, you know, the 80s and the 90s, when I was reading the Lethal Lolita or whatever the Amy Fisher one was, or just really absolutely terrible. I should not have been reading them at the age I was reading them books. And now here we are, where we're looking at telling these stories as not only this entertainment, but also something that can change things. If not for this, Adnan would probably not have gotten this reinvestigation, because some of the things we're going to talk about that's in the motion to vacate came out not because the state looked at it, but because these advocates did. And Rabia had carried his case files in her trunk forever until she got someone to listen to her. And of course, they decided to do an, you know, try to be unbiased, and that may have limited the scope of what they did. Whereas after that, we get accused and in the dark, who decided to take the cases they were covering and not have a limited scope and go wherever it took them. In the dark, got someone off out of prison and off death row. The power of what has come out of this this model is amazing. So even if the model itself was a little flawed, it has been refined through the fire through other journalists like Madeline Barron and Amber Hunt and Maggie Freeling.
Agree 100% with that. I know that there is, I think we can all see that in the way that Rabia engages with Sarah and Serial online, that there is some distaste, I'll say, for the way they did it. Because, you know, there's a difference between, and I agree with Rabia on this, there's a difference between unbiased reporting and reporting truly a full scope of the picture. A lot of this information, especially, I don't know if you guys, if any of you have watched that HBO Max documentary about the corrupt gun task force that happened out of Baltimore, but I had like no clue about that whole situation. Highly recommend watching it. Because of that gun task force, that many, many people in law enforcement within the AD's office, etc., were basically prohibited from testifying in court because it was validated that they were knowingly falsifying their own testimony to get convictions passed through. That wasn't something that was abnormal when this case was happening. And so I think it would have been fair to shine a light on situations like that to say, like, Adnan is not unique in the sense that he has been railroaded by this justice system, because all Kevin Urich cared about, all the rest of, you know, the players involved cared about on the prosecution side and in the law enforcement side was getting a conviction. He was just there, right time, right place. And as we know, we don't need to rehash everything that, you know, happened, because there's a lot that went on. But I agree with Rabia's sentiment that there's a difference in reporting and being biased versus reporting the facts and kind of laying it out there and saying, like, sorry, this is the ugly truth. Like, you may not like it. You may not think it happens everywhere, but it happened to happen in Baltimore. And that's exactly where Adnan was prosecuted. So there is some credence to the unfairness of it all within this case and him being railroaded. But like Whitney said, there isn't a winner in this. If Adnan walks out of the courtroom today, justice still has not been served for Hay, and it hasn't been served for the decades that he's been behind bars. And so I'm hopeful, you know, that eventually we will find the person or people responsible for murdering Hay. That's what my hope is at the end of this. That's all I want, is for Hay to find the justice that she deserves and for her family to finally get those answers, because I feel very bad for them that they believe in their hearts that this is what the truth is. And they have no idea how corrupt the system truly is.
Yes, without being in this space that we're all in, if 10 years ago, the police would have come to me and said, so-and-so is the killer. This is the person that did it. This is the evidence. I would have wholeheartedly, every fiber of my being, believed in the police. I'm not saying that they're all corrupt or all bad things happen, but it does happen. And now being in this line that we're in, we know that. And it's sad, but I would never trust anyone with anything. Police, not police, I don't care. One too many bad stories I've read. But as far as Sarah, yes, I agree. A lot went wrong with Sarah's podcast. A lot went right because it gave the attention to it. It gave that push. I don't think there would have ever, just like you said, ever been a reopening of Adnan's case. There would have never been a more of investigation. The public support without Serial. And then we obviously needed someone with a bit more legal experts. We need a lot more into Adnan's case afterwards.
One of the things that I think is interesting that you've brought up, both of you, about the police misconduct actually is something that's in this motion to vacate. And one of the things the state, mind you, so this motion to vacate, it came from the state. So this is a process of a year-long investigation that they did. And there were two homicide detectives on this case. We heard their names more than we ever want to hear any name, and that's Ritz and McGillivary. There are accusations of misconduct. The state does not, in this motion, make any claims regarding that. However, they do note that in 1999, the same time Adnan was being convicted, Detective Ritz did have misconduct in a different case, State v. Malcolm Bryant, and it resulted in an exoneration in 2016. This poor guy was wrongfully convicted and served 17 years because Ritz failed to disclose exculpatory evidence and impeachment evidence, and according to what this motion says, fabricated evidence. So with that, they are noting in here that at the time Adnan was convicted, one of the investigators on this case had misconduct against another case. So what are the odds he wasn't doing it in other cases that needed a little massaging to get them ready for court?
When you're talking about that, I was thinking, like, you know, I work in HR, right? So when these investigations and stuff that I'm doing come up and I have to, like, interview, you know, everybody involved, and especially when I'm able to corroborate some of the information, it's not usual that this is their first offense, right? It's typical that this has been an ongoing, continuous issue that finally they got to the wrong person and that person was willing to come to HR and express their concerns. And so I see those that parallel too within the state's filing, because I did read the motion to vacate. I'm a nerd like that, and I love reading court filings and everything. I would have been a perfect law clerk, okay? But reading that, I was like, okay, so it's a nice way of alluding to, because if, again, the documentaries or the series on HBO Max is called We Own This City, and it goes into also how the government came in, the federal government came in to kind of say, like, does anybody hear what's going on in Baltimore? Like, we're trying to clean this up over here because we have so much police misconduct, et cetera, and, like, took down the gun task force, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so seeing that, you know, that quick little, like, oh, by the way, he was also under investigation, I think is just kind of a really nice professional way to say, like, some stuff has gone down here. And I really don't want to show all of our cards because it also has the potential to cost the city of Baltimore millions of dollars. And we saw that in the Stephen Avery case, right? Like, where there are some people who believe Stephen Avery is innocent, believe that the, you know, city or whatever, the county manufactured this evidence to basically prevent a claim from being paid out because he was wrongfully convicted the first time.
One of the things I thought was really interesting in this is the DNA testing. It felt like this was such a huge part. So in 2018, they did some testing. Then in 2022, they did some more testing. And this was the testing that was really being pushed for on Adnan's side, and it had to do with the clothing. They also decided to do a independent lab to do kind of touch DNA that was not available in 1999. These are items that have not been tested before, except for Hayes fingernails. They've retested those. But they did find some male DNA, but it was so trace that it's pretty much unusable. And I really thought that if this was going to get anywhere, it was going to be the DNA. And there was a lot of buildup because there was a fight to get the state to do the DNA back in 2018. And it seems like they are still holding other things for further testing. They did find female DNA from some of the areas where you would, you know, if there was a sexual assault occurred, they did not find male DNA there. The male DNA was found, like, on her clothing. So I guess we're just going to have to wait and see if the DNA does anything. But it does feel like the DNA was this big, big buildup that when they filed this motion to vacate, which came kind of out of the blue for me, that the DNA was not part of it because the DNA didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I really felt the DNA would come back before anything else would have been moved. I was very shocked about them still having all this DNA that they haven't tested, especially when someone has been in jail as long or been in prison as long as Adnan.
So I actually talked to Bob about this because I was like, why would you not test evidence out there? Like, you have this person who's in jail, and Bob Motto, Defense Diaries, as we all know and love him, can ramble on about anything. And his wife, Allison, is actually aware of, like, she has a great background in DNA, et cetera, and has a really great understanding of it. But he was like, why? what motivation is there from the prosecution side? They've gotten their conviction. There's no desire from there to be like, we want to make sure we got the right guy. When they get their conviction, they're sure they have the right guy. In the interest of, you know, how the public feels the justice system could work or should work versus how it actually works, we have, you know, that's why we have End the Backlog, because there are situations where this is just not a thing. You know, I hate that that's the mentality behind the state, because they should be acting at the prevailing justice and say like, yes, we want to make sure justice has been served. And they should be okay enough in their investigation, in the trial, and in, you know, the arguments that they made during that trial, if they ever went to trial, to be able to stand their ground and say, test all you want to, go ahead. It may not do anything, but they have no obligation and no reason to do it. And, you know, I think that speaks to a bigger problem, but, you know, he could have been exonerated if that DNA had proven to be somebody else. And it just boggles my mind that they were like, nah, we're good. We're good with what happened.
Would this have been something his defense attorney should have pushed in during the trial period or the investigation period prior to him ever getting convicted? In my mind, all of that DNA should have been tested, every ounce of her clothing. But that could have rested on his defense attorney's lap, and she should have done it versus the prosecution.
I think that his defense attorney did not utilize every single aspect of the law that she should have. I mean, there were witnesses that went unaccounted for. We've all heard of the Asia McClain statement that she saw Adnan in the library that day. She had a conversation with him and she was ready to go to court to testify that. And it was just lost on a note somewhere in her stack of papers. So I don't feel that his original defense attorney really used her knowledge, if she has all of this knowledge, of the justice system to help Adnan. And that was one of the appeals process that they put out there of, hey, listen, my lawyer didn't do what she should have done. And we have this witness willing to come forward. Can we use it now? But was it enough for an appeal? Was it enough for a second trial? Court says no.
Appealing on ineffective assistance of counsel is very, very difficult. And they did try this particularly with Christina Gutierrez, because she was disbarred by consent. She like agreed to it in 2001. So 2 years after the trial, his attorney was disbarred. That is, well, you want to talk about a high bar. Getting disbarred is a high bar. So they definitely had appealed based on ineffective assistance of counsel. But it's really hard, because how much of it is ineffective assistance of counsel? How much of it, even if ineffective, would have changed the outcome? And how much of it was just defense strategy? So one of the biggest things in this that actually people asked Rabia and Colin if this was the bombshell, and it had to do with alternative suspects in the case. And it wasn't just that they had alternative suspects. It was that the information was not given to the defense for these what are considered reasonable alternative suspects. And actually, Rabia said in an Instagram Live, they didn't know all of this until this motion to vacate. This was stuff they didn't know about, because when the prosecution has a paper and they don't put it in the file and they don't give it to the defense, then obviously nobody's going to know about it. And nobody's policing their files to make sure there's no Brady violations. I covered a case where they found a Brady violation because the prosecutor had literally dropped dead on the golf course of a heart attack. And the new prosecutor came in. It's the Barbara Gibbons case, if anyone wants to listen to it. New prosecutor comes in, opens the drawer, and finds the evidence that exonerated this kid in the drawer. There are two alternative suspects that they have determined were not cleared appropriately, and the information on them was not given fully to the defense. Even though, according to Rabia, the one thing Christina Gutierrez did really well was request a lot of discovery. She requested everything. She did not fall asleep on the job in that. They have opted not to name these suspects, and they actually intermingle their information within this so that you can't figure out who is who. Although if you've listened to everything, you know who one of them is. We have been asked not to publicly speculate, but one of them they talk about how the person's polygraph test was improperly administered and then improperly interpreted. And we do know who took two polygraphs. Like, we know that. So there are some other things, though, like things that the state knew about. And Kevin Urich, the prosecutor, literally didn't show it. And one is that one of the suspects had a motive to kill Hay and threatened her life in the presence of someone else. And they don't just have one person saying this. They have two people who came forward and said, this is this person's motive. And that information was not given to the defense. So they could not present this person as a reasonable alternative suspect. And that is one of the first things in this filing. And it is huge. And I thought it was the bombshell. Rabia said it is not. Adnan's innocence claim has more information. They're keeping a bit quiet on it right now because this is still a legal matter. Even if his conviction's vacated, they can take him back to trial. The defense is not putting all their cards on the table right now.
Yeah, and neither is the prosecution, right? They're keeping everything mum. I feel that based off of the way the motion to vacate was worded, that they truly are not considering moving forward in the future with any type of charges against Adnan whatsoever. I think they realize how weak their case is. And the, you know, I keep thinking about, I'm very petty in this moment. I just keep thinking about Thiru. And I'm so like, I'm so glad this is happening because he must be like so livid and pissed because he has fought so long to not have this happen. So I was just like, oh God, dude, I wish I had something to like rub in your face over it because it was so great. But I'm hopeful that if the judge approves the motion, if you will, or accepts the motion and Adnan gets to go home today, that I think that this is the prosecution's way of saying, I don't know what the formal term is. I can't think of it right now, but where they have an opportunity to continue to convict without prejudice or something like that, or with prejudice. I can't remember which one's the one, meaning they could always come back and try him again.
Without prejudice means they can come back and try him again, which is what the state is asking for. However, they are also asking in here that he be released on his own recognizance. And if they think he did it, I don't know, maybe it's Maryland law, but I would be really surprised if you vacate someone's conviction, you intend to charge them again, you would let them out. We've seen people still in prison after getting a new trial because they're now being held in pretrial detention. They don't get released immediately on their own recognizance on a murder charge. So this would vacate the conviction. And I believe they have to, within 30 days, make a decision whether to charge him or not. But I'm not 100% sure on that because I'd have to brush up on Maryland law, brush up on it as though I have any base knowledge of it. I would have to Google it.
Yeah, I'll have to ask somebody.
Honestly, I was shocked that there were two other suspects, that they had anyone other in mind besides Adnan. So when that came out in that motion, I was literally like, who? Who else could they possibly think it is, considering they, in my opinion only, have been tunneled vision on Adnan since the beginning. I had to like scramble, look, I mean, kind of find these Reddit, because it's all theories at this point. Nobody's been named. But of course, curiosity in this line of work, I did. It's shocking. I had no clue that there was ever even two other possible people that they had, that law enforcement had in mind. So that was shocking to me.
I agree. And I think that was part of this bombshell for me was, hey, there's some options here. This has not always just been Adnan and only Adnan. We've got some things here. But knowing that there is more that both the prosecution and the defense are holding tight-lipped to, which I don't blame them. This is a very well-publicized case, and it could very easily, the public could ruin this very easily if they get their hands on the right information. It could cause some serious issues with a trial moving forward. So I do not blame them for being tight-lipped on some of these things, but just listing the Brady violations alone, holy moly, that was a big thing for me. And most of the world didn't know what a Brady violation was until making a murderer.
Now I like to point out Brady violations all the time. The people use those TV shows where they find out mistakes. And I like, nope, Brady violation there.
the cell phone evidence comes up, and if you listen to Undisclosed, there was actually one point where my brain just shut off with the cell phone evidence and going over it. But the main, let's get the cell tower evidence just down to the basic points. And it's that the state expert was not given the cover letter that explained that incoming calls weren't as accurate. And so he, in 2015, said in an affidavit, he would not have testified to the accuracy had he seen that cover letter. So that is a Brady violation that had occurred and has already been brought up in appeals and post-conviction relief petition. However, this new investigation that the state's been doing for the last year consulted two non-trial experts, and both of them said that what the jury was told about the cell phone evidence was not accurate. So anyone clinging to the cell phone evidence, we now have multiple people saying it wasn't, what the jury heard was not correct. The reason the cell phone evidence matters so very much is that a lot of Jay Wild's story that implicates Adnan and saying he saw Hayes' body and he was an accessory after the fact and all of that, his story was very inconsistent and it eventually was shaped around the cell phone evidence. And the cell phone evidence is not necessarily accurate, meaning he shaped a story around something that might not be correct. Jay Wilds definitely gets his moment in the sun in this motion to vacate. They talk about his multiple stories and pivotal things like, when did he first see Hayes' body? He put it at three different locations. Now that is something you don't forget. Maybe you have a reason to move it from, like, I saw it here, but I don't want to implicate the people here, so I'm going to say something else. However, that doesn't explain all of his stories. Also, he had his story backed up by a woman who gave the story as she remembered it months later. And then during the HBO documentary, they showed her that she was actually in a class that night. And she said, oh, they couldn't have been at my house. Now, Jay said they were at that house and that she was there. Now there's evidence she couldn't have been there. So I thought it was interesting that the investigation from the HBO documentary made it into here, which is why documentaries, podcasts, media on wrongful convictions is so important.
I am curious, though, now that you mentioned Jay Wilds, I am curious to know, and I just tweeted Bob so he could answer my question. But so if the motion is granted for, you know, the sentence to be vacated, et cetera, I wonder how that impacts the pleas or the deals made behind the scenes with people like Jay Wilds, et cetera, for allegedly lying about what he witnessed, what he saw, what he did, how he participated in Hayes' murder, et cetera. Because without there being an Adnan, then Jay Wilds' story doesn't hold up at all. I mean, still doesn't. But, and also shout out to Susan Simpson for that keen eagle eye that led to the information regarding the cell phone evidence. You know, thankful to her 100% for that. I'm curious and wonder if there's any recourse for Adnan's side, essentially, to go after the people who were lying. Or do they kind of just get to wash their hands of it and say, whoopsie?
I think that Jay has gotten his reprieve over and over and over, because if you look past this Adnan case, he's been arrested 10, 15 times and has walked on every single one of those charges since then. What's going on there? That gives me questions. But if we didn't have Adnan, we had these other suspects, Jay's irrelevant.
I imagine Bob's answer is going to have to do with statute of limitations on perjury. That's my guess. And also, Jay's direct deal in this case was he was charged as an accessory after the fact, and he got a 5-year suspended sentence, which means he didn't go serve any time. He already pleaded out on that, and that is a done deal. What would be interesting is if he was somehow implicated in the crime in a different way. Depending on how severe that charge is, there may be charges. But I honestly think that I don't think Jay had anything to do with this necessarily. And I'm open to being wrong. But I think he's going to, after that Intercept article where he basically told a whole new version of events, I don't think he's going to come back up. I highly doubt the state, if they went back to trial against Adnan, would want to put him on the stand anyway.
Like you, Charlie, I agree. I don't really, I mean, I could be wrong, of course, but I don't necessarily think he had anything to do with it. I think he just, it was Adnan or him, and kind of just made up lies where he could.
Well, I got my answer from Bob. And it's, he said that they're separate. And frankly, in light of what's happening in this case right now, he's not so sure there wasn't something nefarious going on with Jay Wilds and the state back in the day. As much as I find him to not be like a credible person at all, and yes, he's been arrested for other things, he too, it hurts me to say this, he too could be a victim of the state, you know, because he could have been given an alternative that would not have worked for his life, right? It could have been like, we can put you away for life too, if you don't say this, or if you don't agree with everything that happened. This is where you see things are happening. If you remember when you were listening to Undisclosed, Rabia makes a point in there to say, did you hear that tap? It sounds like they're pointing at a piece of the paper to remind him of what to say. And you can hear that if you've listened to any of the audio tapes, you know, in his statements, and even with the Intercept thing, he's still trying to cover his ass. And for what purpose now? So much time has passed. And if we're talking about like the statute of limitations, what's he worried about with coming out and saying like, yes, they made me lie? I mean, it's not like they can take back the deal and force him to go back to prison, because ultimately he's shedding a light on the misconduct that we knew was happening in Baltimore. So why doesn't he just come out now and say it?
I think because he still lives in Baltimore and still has to deal with the police. I think he was young, poor, black, and they threatened him that it was him or Adnan, and he was an adult. Adnan was 17. He was eligible for the death penalty. I think there was a lot more going on, and that Jay was being used by the police. And I do want to bring up, as we're mentioning Jay's arrest record, I want to mention someone else's arrest record. And it was one or both of the other suspects that the state is not naming and is intermingling their facts, that one of the suspects did engage in violence against a woman he knew. One of the suspects engaged in serial rape and sexual assault. And one of the suspects, without provocation or excuse, attacked a woman in her vehicle, which is something that is considered a possible murder scene for what happened to Hay, was her own car. And the car was found essentially behind the house where one of the suspects was living at the time. We don't know if all of that evidence goes against one of the suspects or if it really is split evenly between the two of them. Either way, some of these arrests were known at the time of trial. Some didn't happen until after the trial. Now, one of the things is, if Christina Gutierrez had been given the name of the suspect and the suspect hadn't been cleared prematurely and she had the name, she could have pulled his record and seen the violence and then presented him as a reasonable alternative suspect. So that she did not know to even look at him is why that is such a big deal. Yeah, she could have found his arrest record, but how did she know she should be looking at him? And she should have known, because they should have given her these papers.
And a quick question, did we know, I can't remember now, because it's been a few days since I've read it, but for the individuals who came forward to say that Hay's life was threatened, was this in the beginning of the trial, like the initial trial, or did this happen after the fact?
No, he knew about it before trial. It was a lead that came into the investigation.
Mm.
It just boggles my mind that someone would threaten her in front of people and that person be cleared. I'm not quite sure what happened with that person. As far as the other person that may have been, or that had been convicted of violence against women, they should have known about that. That's in that area around that time frame. Like, come on. I don't even know what to say to that, because the whole two suspects still boggle my mind.
To kind of springboard off of that, I feel like it's cop 101 is to say, okay, what has happened similar to this in the area? That's a good lead. Quick search here, guys. What's going on in the area? That should have been a fairly easy path. for cops to go down.
One of the things with the motion to vacate is the way they wrote it was really interesting because they're like, okay, the state is saying the Brady violations alone would substantiate the granting of a new trial. Then they say the new evidence regarding the possible involvement of alternative suspects also gives the state great concern. And then they say, but then there's more. The reliability of the evidence at trial is now in question. So they kind of broke this into three spots: Brady violations, alternative suspects, and the reliability of the evidence at trial being in question. This being a 25-page motion with a lot of blah, blah, blah legal stuff in there, man, it really gets to, it packs a punch. It's a very persuasive motion. In talking again, Bob Motto, I said we didn't have him here because we're doing the listener perspective and not the legal one, but we're just going to keep bringing him up. He told me, he's like, this is a unicorn motion. You don't see it. You don't see the state putting together a tightly written boom, 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 here's why he needs a new trial, and putting these cards on the table. Now, they are withholding some of it because they have ordered the Baltimore police to go back and reinvestigate this case. Which, thank goodness, because how many wrongful convictions do we see them just be like, oh, well, we had the guy, you let him go. I don't know what you want us to do about it. Justice for Adnan is not justice. It's step one in justice for Hay. And that has to happen. And you know what? I don't believe the reinvestigation is going to point towards Adnan. I don't think he did it. But if you think he did it, this reinvestigation will hopefully shore up, you know, the position. And if this goes to trial again against Adnan or someone else, at least everything will be on the table.
Yeah, a fair trial is what needed to be done. At the end of the day, Adnan, regardless, did it, didn't do it, he deserves a fair trial. And he did not, under any circumstances, get a fair trial.
I do really like how the state of Maryland was like, listen, precedent says that this one thing allows us to do this. But wait, if you say that's not enough, we've got something else for you. And they're like, but if two's not enough, hold on, we've got three. But if that's not enough, we can bring you some more stuff. It's kind of a hold my beer, watch this situation. We've got it.
The importance of conviction integrity units is really highlighted in this because this is something that does not happen in every jurisdiction. It doesn't always happen in Baltimore. But to take a year and have the prosecutor's office, the state, not the prosecutor's office, but the state that has access to the prosecutor's files, look through and make sure everything was done correctly. This is the, you know, who polices the police, who polices the prosecution? Well, the state can. And the state can do it if they have a conviction integrity unit of people with integrity who are going to take a hard look at it and not try to cover anything up.
Wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think that's what I've been also trying to get across because, you know, we've mentioned the hearing is happening as we speak, right? So we're seeing it in real time and stuff. And I had mentioned in our group chat about this as there were concerns about Hay's brother being present, et cetera, that there were a lot of people kind of going in on him on social media for not being present for the hearing. And it reminds me of what Mariah Day has been saying on her TikTok is that she believed in the prosecution. I think we see that in Young's statement is that he believed that the prosecution was telling him everything and that they had the right person. And so it makes me feel a little bit more relieved that they're open to the idea of the alternative suspects, that they're open to the idea that Adnan was not responsible for this. But I can't imagine how completely and utterly devastating and a rock to your world this whole thing has been. Because yes, Adnan could walk out, but their family still has a potential another trial to go through. I just want to kind of put it out there for those who are picking sides in this and realize that you can, what I've been like hashtagging all along, is that you can be happy for Adnan and still want justice for Hay. That you can still celebrate if this happens and the motion is approved, still do that, but be cognizant and aware that there's a whole other side to this that has no positive outcome. It sucks for everyone involved. Adnan's a victim, but he continues and gets to continue his life. And Hay does not have that opportunity.
My heart literally breaks for her brother right now.
That's exactly what I meant by this. This is a lose-lose situation. I mean, it's great that Adnan could potentially be freed, but he spent 22 years of his life stuck in prison, wrongfully, potentially. And then now Hay's family has to, like Lainey said, relive this trauma again. Their heart is being ripped out and placed on a platter for the world to re-examine all over again. When they thought that justice had prevailed, they thought that they could move forward with their life and celebrate Hay as a human. And now we have to go back through all of this.
This is a lot. And I feel for Hay's family to have been told for 20 plus years, oh yeah, we got the guy. We got the guy. Don't worry. Serial comes out. No, we got the guy. Yurik does an Intercept article interview. Jay does it too. Oh yeah, look at this. We clearly got the guy. Then they do an investigation behind the scenes for a year. And 2 days before the motion was filed, they call the family and say, oh, hey, by the way, 2 days before. And then 3 days before the hearing, oh, by the way, the hearing's on Monday. This is like something that I know as a listener and a follower of this case, someone who's passionate about wrongful convictions and the integrity of our system, I feel overwhelmed in this moment. Hay's family has had this thrown at them. And that on top of Serial, which they didn't participate in, Undisclosed, Truth and Justice, the HBO documentary, none of which they participated in. I think this has been a lot for them. And for this to continue and for her brother now to be sitting there on a Zoom call, basically listening to the state argue against the case they argued to the family, I can't even imagine what they're feeling right now. One of the things they're doing right now in court, we're watching a live tweet feed from a journalist. Let me give him his credit. His name is Lee Sanderlin, and he's with the Baltimore Sun, and he is live tweeting from the media room what's happening, and they are going through this motion, arguing the points in it. And they are impeaching their star witness from trial, Jay Wilds, right now, basically saying everything we've already talked about in regards to this. But if they are impeaching their star witness against Adnan Syed, what are they going to do at trial? Like, they're doing this on the public record. This is huge.
It happened very, very quickly. The fastest I have ever seen a motion have a hearing date. Like, it's the next business day? That's unheard of.
The wheels of justice do not turn slowly in this case. It's incredibly impactful that the prosecution is coming forward and saying, there's a potential we got this completely wrong.
It happened just now. Judge Finn overturned Slaget conviction.
Unreal. I cannot believe
God. It. Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
Wow.
That is amazing.
Like, wow.
Wow. And can you imagine the doors this opens for other people who have been wrongfully convicted, for the state to say, I mean, you could not have a better PR stunt, truly, than saying, like, we are on the side of justice. Look at what we're willing to do. We're willing to lay our cards out there and say, we got it wrong, folks. I hope this encourages other states' attorneys to look at those cases where there's a possible wrongful conviction happening and really dive deep into it. This is incredible. I'm so happy.
Same. This to be followed through by other states. They have to look at this and be like, we can admit we were wrong and we could make it right.
The judge just ordered Syed released under home detention, removing his shackles now, orders a new trial.
God.
I can't even imagine. Like, I can picture Rabia right now. She's sobbing. Rabia did this. This is Rabia. Rabia did this. And she did this before Serial. She was working on this. She brought the case to Serial. She carried those files in her trunk. We all know the story. She did this, and she's been trying to do this for a very long time. And she went on and did this for other people, too. We have to recognize the work she's done with Undisclosed. She and Colin are working together on more wrongful conviction cases coming up next year. Susan Simpson has a new podcast where she's also working Wrongful Conviction. So together and separately, they're doing it. They're continuing to do what they just did for Adnan for other people.
This just brings to show that even if it seems like an uphill battle, things could be won. Like, the change is happening. That's essentially, but I'm literally lost for words right now. I'm not emotionally normally, but I am literally on the verge of tears. I cannot. I'm still just shocked.
I'm literally holding back tears right now because I am the emotional one.
I am amazed that this happened, that, you know, those of us who've been following the case have been experiencing this together on social media, and it's how much we've learned through this, but most importantly, that there are states out there, there are people in the state's attorney's offices, not just in Maryland, but in other states, who are willing to take a hard look at what their side has done in these cases to make sure that they can hold up their convictions and to call out when they can't. This is a testament to what can happen when the state stops looking at every defendant as an enemy and starts saying, what happened? What's the truth? What is justice here?
And ask that Adnan Syed be given a new trial where he is adequately represented and the latest evidence presented in the interests of fairness and justice, which is and has always been the hallmark of my administration as state attorney for Baltimore City. At this stage, a trial has been set in for a new trial date, because we're not yet declaring Adnan Syed is innocent, but we are declaring that in the interest of fairness and justice, he is entitled to a new trial. And because this is an ongoing case, there are limits to what I can say in this matter, but it is imperative that we start the process of securing a new trial with adequate representation for Mr. Syed to ensure that the family of Ms. Heyman Lee knows with full confidence that the person responsible for her death and the death of their loved one will be held accountable. Ms. Lee's family deserve closure. They deserve justice